The following message is brought to you by Mark Maurer, President, National Federation of the Blind, 200 East Wells Street at Jernigan Place, Baltimore, Maryland, 21230.
Greetings, fellow Federationists. This is Wednesday, August 3rd, 2011, and Presidential Release number 397. A number of people have called in the last while to ask if we thought that the Social Security checks would be arriving on time. As you know, there has been quite a debate in the last few weeks about whether the debt of the United States would be met and whether there would be enough money to pay the Social Security checks. There has been talk in the last 2 weeks that whether some of the debt would be paid or not, the Social Security checks would go out. I offered the opinion to some of my colleagues that there would not be a default on the 3rd of August, and I am pleased to say that, at least so far, my supposition was correct. There has been no default. The Social Security checks have come. If you've had trouble with your Social Security check, I would like to know. We think that things are in order for the moment. I know that the country is worried about the debt and the expenditures that are happening and the tax base and like that, but at the moment, things seem to be going well. I understand that the stock market fell like a brick yesterday, and I know that this morning it fell some more. So whether or not there will be financial trouble based upon all the negotiations, I don't know, but I am informed that the Social Security checks have gone and that they are good and that you can cash them and that that part of it is all right. We have been talking at our national convention, which concluded, as you know, after the first week in July, about subminimum wage provisions contained in Section 511 of the Workforce Investment Act, which includes the Rehabilitation Act. Now, Section 511 said that subminimum wages could be paid to rehabilitation clients if a number of conditions were met. When we saw this in the Act, which came out just before the National Convention, it's not an act yet, it's a proposed piece of legislation, we said to the people who were managing the legislation that we did not want this thing to pass, that we thought it was a very bad idea to include provisions within the Workforce Investment Act and within the Rehabilitation Act, which would specify the mechanism to be used to pay to clients subminimum wages. And we said we wanted them to take it out. They said that they weren't going to take it out, that they didn't want to talk about it. I asked some of the people who wrote the language if they would put into the legislation provisions which said that if you wanted to challenge subminimum wages, there was a mechanism for doing it. And they said they couldn't do it. I asked them to say that the employers would have to pay at least the minimum wage if there was a successful challenge, and they said they could not do that. And then I asked them if they would require the rehabilitation program to pay the amount that would have been subminimum wage payments if there was a successful challenge, and they said they couldn't do that. And consequently, what they said was, this is what you get. You are expected to support this legislation because we've written it for you, and you should like it. And we said, no, we don't like it. There's no way to like it. They said there are a lot of good things in this rehabilitation proposal, and we said maybe so, but we don't want subminimum wage provisions in it. As a matter of fact, we have been thinking all along that the subminimum wage provisions that are contained in the Fair Labor Standards Act, which was adopted back in 1938, that those should be removed or if not completely removed, certainly modified to make it easier to challenge subminimum wage payments. And they said they couldn't change that law. To which one says, well, what have you got a Congress for if it can't change the law? I thought that was what Congress did. Anyway, we said to the folks on the HELP Committee, this is the Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, we said, we want you to take these things out. And they said that they were with us in spirit, but they couldn't do it. And we said, we want you to do it. They said, well, if you can get somebody else to propose it, we'll vote for it, or at least some of them did, and nobody would propose a change to the law which said no more subminimum wages in the rehabilitation proposal, or no more subminimum wages in the Rehabilitation Act or in the Fair Labor Standards Act. We said we want people to know that this is happening. Whenever we mention it to members of the public, they're shocked that disabled people can receive subminimum wage payments today. We held public information demonstrations in more than 20 locations in the states around the United States. We had one in Maryland. We had four of them in Pennsylvania. We had one in Des Moines, Iowa. We had one in Casper, Wyoming. We had two in Oregon, in Portland, and we've had numerous other public demonstrations so that people would know that current law says you can pay to disabled workers less than the minimum wage. Most folks don't know this. We got a lot of reaction from the members of the committee. They were mostly worried about the debt of the United States, but a lot of them said to us, we have never focused on this topic and we're pleased that you brought it to our attention. Now, some of them were mad about it, especially the ones who wrote it, and they said, we want you to have more respect, to which one might say, I'd like you to have more respect for the proper wages for disabled people. And consequently, we are now looking for somebody who can bring a piece of legislation to change the Fair Labor Standards Act so that subminimum wages are no longer authorized by American law. This is a thing we ought to have done already. It's a thing that Dr. Tenbrook, when the National Federation of the Blind came into being, he wrote to members of Congress about it back in the 1940s. It's a thing that we have considered for years. We worked to get unionizing authorized by the National Labor Relations Board in the 1970s and the 1980s. It didn't used to be legal for disabled workers to become part of a union and to bargain collectively for fair wages. But it is now, because of the work we've done. We should now address subminimum wage payments for disabled workers in a more systematic way, and we're looking for members of Congress to do it. This has been a very productive month on the subject of subminimum wages, but we've got to keep the momentum going. We've got to get the petitions that we've signed into members of Congress, and we've got to get copies of them here so that we can continue to develop the momentum on prohibiting subminimum wages for disabled workers. Please keep up the good work and keep that momentum moving. Keep the spirit alive. Tell your members of Congress that subminimum wages should be prohibited in the United States today. And on the subject of the subminimum wage, I have an announcement here from Anil Lewis, who says, the subminimum wage issue was a significant part of this year's convention. We were able to secure over 2,000 signatures on our subminimum wage petition. Our nationwide protest sent a strong message to the Senate HELP Committee, and we were able to postpone indefinitely the consideration of the Workforce Investment Act, Section 511. However, the fight has just begun. The effort to remove Section 511 from the Workforce Investment Act is only the prelude to the repeal of Section 14C of the Fair Labor Standards Act. Therefore, we need to continue the good fight. Many of our affiliates have subsequently sent additional signed petitions to me. Our Nevada, Nebraska, West Virginia, Ohio, Missouri, New Mexico, Connecticut, Wisconsin, and Maryland affiliates have sent additional signed petitions. All of our affiliates and chapters should continue the campaign to get signatures on the sub-minimum wage petition. The new deadline is the end of August. Congress has gone home, as you know, and it is coming back. Send your signed petitions to my attention at the NFB National Office. As we work to secure sponsors for our fair wages legislation, all of us should stand ready for the real fight to repeal the discriminatory, immoral subminimum wage provisions of Section 14C of the Fair Labor Standards Act. This from Anil Lewis, and I agree with him 100%. His telephone number is 410-659-9314, extension 2374, or you can send him email at alewis, A-L-E-W-I-S, at nfb.org. Now, I have an announcement or two here. I have one from Wanda Sloan, who says, annually, there are millions who have the disadvantages of diabetes in the United States. It is estimated 34 million, and many who are African American are at a higher risk of contracting diabetes than others. I am certain, says Wanda, that you are aware that this disease is one of the principal causes of blindness in the United States, probably today the leading cause of new blindness. Because of food and environmental changes, our young people are now developing a high rate of type 2 diabetes. This is the type that you gain later in life. When I attended the Diabetes Action Network meeting at our last convention, I learned that 6 state affiliates have Diabetes Action Network divisions out of the whole United States. This situation must no longer be allowed to continue. As a member of the Diabetes Action Network Board of Directors and the president of a state DAN division, I am sending this letter to encourage you to appoint somebody in your state to establish and coordinate a DAN division. If you are interested in finding out more about this program, please email Wanda Sloan or Mike Freeman. Mike Freeman is the Diabetes Action Network National President. We can give you suggestions about how to get a DAN division started in your state and the kinds of activities needed to promote your state's division. I look forward to hearing from you. Wanda Sloan says, my email address is, and it appears to me to be, wslon4@roadrunner.com. This is from Wanda Sloan, who is a Diabetes Action Network board member and president of the DAN division of the NFB of Ohio. Here is an announcement from Melissa Kobolinski about Meet the Blind Month 2011. As you are aware, October has become National Federation of the Blind Meet the Blind Month. This is our coordinated nationwide campaign to increase awareness of and support for the National Federation of the Blind. During Meet the Blind Month, NFB chapters and affiliates throughout the nation are encouraged to conduct a variety of activities to spread the message of our organization throughout local communities. This year, as a part of this effort, a challenge will be added to Meet the Blind Month. The challenge is to organize innovative and creative events in local communities in support of Meet the Blind Month. We welcome all chapters and affiliates to join in the challenge for developing the most unique event. Further details about Meet the Blind Month and this year's challenge will be distributed to affiliate and chapter presidents, as well as posted on the Meet the Blind Month website by mid-August. Please direct your questions about Meet the Blind Month to Melissa Kobolinski, this year's coordinator. She may be reached by phone at 410-659-9314, extension 2423, or by email at mkobelinski@nfb.org, says Melissa Kobolinski. Since we last met on the presidential release, we have had our NFB Youth Slam activity. This year we had 150 or thereabouts students who came to our Youth Slam activity and participated in building science programs, figuring out technology, doing mathematics, and all like that. We did this one at Towson University with some of the activities here at the National Federation of the Blind Jernigan Institute, our headquarters here in Baltimore. This was a splendid gathering of young people from across the country and those who could do the kind of teaching that would let folks know that whatever kinds of activities youth would like to have as careers, they have a sure possibility of doing that. We can build together to bring excitement into our lives if we dream enough and build enough together and have faith in each other. The Youth Slam went as well as any that we've ever had. I realize that some of these Youth Slam activities have gone into other states. Hobie Wedler this year has been a part of our Youth Slam. He's been a participant in Youth Slam activities in times past. He has won more than one of our scholarships, and he is working on PhD work in chemistry. He put together a chemistry class for a number of blind youth in California, and he also participated in this kind of a Youth Slam. We are sending out the information that you can do science, technology, engineering, and mathematics work whether you're blind or you're not blind, and we're sending it all over America, and this is what happens when we do Youth Slam. I noticed at about the time we were having our Youth Slam that a number of leaders of organizations of the blind from Mongolia came, and they were here on one of the days of the Youth Slam, so they got the joy of observing the kinds of things that we do in the Youth Slam. This year, we had our blind drivable car here. We had both of them. It was as hot as we've ever had, I think, in Baltimore, except one day. It was over 100 degrees. I think it was 106. And it was very, very hot out there. We drove the car around the block with all the students in it. Not all at the same time, of course, because they can't all fit in one car, but we went around and around, and we also had people from CBS who came here to observe the kind of work that we're doing in building this technology, along with the scientists at Virginia Tech University. It was a very successful time, and I look forward to doing more of them in the future. This weekend, we are having a presidents and treasurers meeting here at our Jernigan Institute. One of the things we do is get enough education into the heads of our leaders throughout the country that we can build our affiliates, and we have to manage the financial part of it so the presidents and treasurers are coming together this weekend so that we can be sure that we're doing all of the work that has to be done in order to make the affiliates operate in accordance with all the regulations and laws that exist. A number of state presidents and treasurers will be participating in this meeting this weekend. Charlie Brown and Bridget Burke are putting together the program for this meeting this weekend, and I will be participating myself. After the meeting is over, as I said to a number of you at the National Convention, I will be heading to Toronto, Canada, where the American Bar Association is having its annual meeting. Why are we having the American Bar Association meeting in Canada outside of the United States? I don't really know the answer to that question, but I have been curious. And so I will be heading there because the American Bar Association is recognizing the work that Dan Goldstein and I have done to bring greater opportunity to blind people through work in the legal area. We protect as best we can the rights of blind people to participate in the same activities that other people take for granted. And because of the recognition of that kind of work, I am going to Canada to receive an award from the American Bar Association. This brings me to the end of the presidential release. If people from Poland are Poles, obviously people from Holland are Holes. Lawyers are disbarred, clergymen defrocked, electricians delighted, musicians denoted, cowboys deranged, models deposed, tree surgeons debarked, and dry cleaners depressed.
The preceding message was brought to you by Mark Maurer, President, National Federation of the Blind, 200 East Wells Street at Jernigan Place, Baltimore, Maryland, 21230.